It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Whether it's fair or not, Pittsburgh's South Side has been saddled in part with a bad reputation as a weekend party destination in which drunken conversations and confrontations sometimes turn violent. But do the people who live there think, especially those longtime residents, that it's such a bad place after all? A recent study by the University of Pittsburgh's Urban Studies program interviewed people from all parts of the neighborhood and yielded some results that may surprise you. I'm joined now in Studio A by Pitt Professor of Urban Studies, Michael Glass. Dr. Glass, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having us, Paul.
And also with us is one of the students who worked on this project, Jason Wald. Jason, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. And you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. We'd like to hear from you, whether you are a Southside resident or someone who merely visits the Southside to perhaps party like a rock star. Does the Southside undeservedly get a bad rap? Call us at 412-246-2002. Dr. Glass, we'll start with you. You chose a neighborhood research project. You choose one each semester for your students. What led you to pick the South Side this time around?
Well, as an urban geographer, I find any place that is used by so many different communities to be inherently fascinating. You know, here you've got a single space, a neighborhood confined by the river on one side and by the hilltops on the other, and that one space is conceived of so differently by so many different communities, whether it's longtime residents, whether it's the students that might come in on a Friday night, or whether it's people that work here and commute through here. So each of those communities makes something different of the place, and that's great. It makes for a vibrant community, but it also leads to a lot of conflicts, as you rightly pointed out. So as my students are really interested in the dynamics of urban neighborhoods, what better place to choose?
And the media, I think, probably sometimes gets a bad rap as well for having allegedly dwelled too much on the problems in the South Side. And I think one of the reasons why we know a lot about the South Side and it's a place that's very visible on our radar is because there are quite a few nights on the 11 o'clock news when we see that some incident of one kind or another has occurred on the South Side. Is the media part of the perception problem here?
It's not just with the South Side, but the old adage in media is if it bleeds, it leads. And I think that the South Side has suffered from that somewhat. With what the students were looking at, we found that there's a lot of positivity and positive vibes about the South Side. We really wanted to capture some of that because things have really turned around on the South Side, and it's interesting to see what has led to that change.
But what do you mean by turned around? Are we talking about the change that has occurred here, to some extent the gentrification? Certainly we've seen property values go up since the mill closed. I mean, you had Jones and Lachlan along the river there. And this was a different place decades ago. You had it was a grittier environment. You had hardworking, blue-collar, middle-class people largely living and working here and in their own way partying here because there have always been a lot of bars down here. So now it's become a destination for people that want to go and have a good time. People want to live here. They want to be in the middle of it. So the property values have gone up. So is that what we're talking about, or is there some other change that has occurred here that you're talking about?
My experience with the South Side dates back to 2002 when I came to Pittsburgh. So I don't remember the J&L Mill, but I've spoken to longtime residents whose husbands used to work there and do remember fondly the days of the South Side as being a shot in a bear type of environment well into the past. What I'm talking about in terms of the changes are the things that have happened more recently. Some of the issues to do with what we call high-volume vertical drinking, where establishments will pack in a lot of patrons into an establishment in places that might be a little less convivial or a little less opening to a diverse array of patrons, have been moved out in favor of some, well, you could call them gentrified, but you could also call them more hospitable institutions. And in fact, talking about hospitality, there's a new plan that's just being rolled out for the city called the Sociable City Plan. So it's interesting to see
which Bruce Krause, the president of the Pittsburgh City Council, has has put together?
Well, he put it together in cooperation with a consulting firm out of California called the Responsible Hospitality Institute. We partnered with City Council and Councilman Krause's office, I believe strongly in academic community engagement. And it was interesting to see whether those plans that they've put in place to try and combat some of the negatives of the past, the negatives of the nighttime economy, are starting to be changed by that plan and other initiatives.
So you're talking about an evolution now out of the party atmosphere that's been fostered on the South Side. You came up with a couple of interesting terms that, quite frankly, I've never heard before that are terms used in this study. And you mentioned one of them just now, vertical drinking. There's vertical drinking, and then you also mentioned horizontal drinking on the South Side, as you call it. Explain the difference between the two.
All right. If you go into an establishment where there aren't any tables around, there's a bar, and the venues are established to get a higher capacity of people in there. They're standing up. They're drinking. That's vertical drinking.
Eliminating the tables to squeeze in as many people as you can.
That's correct. And that's opposed to more bistro type of environments where you would sit down. There would be less of an emphasis on large quantities of alcohol being consumed, and rather it would be in conjunction with a meal or some entertainment.
The horizontal
correct.
Drinking. So do you find that the vertical, the packing in, does that exacerbate some of the problems that we've seen on the South Side?
It does. It does. And a lot of the research that's occurring on the nighttime economy, those things that happen after 6 p.m. until about 2 a.m., it's occurring in Europe where they do find that those large barn-type environments where there's a lot of patrons in there, it does cause problems, especially in situations like in Pittsburgh where there's a hard stop to when everybody is then pushed out onto the street. That 2 a.m. close where suddenly there's a lot of patrons that are going on to very narrow sidewalks, that's going to cause problems.
Don't you have that in a lot of places, though? A lot of cities have that where there's always that, whether it's 1, 2, or 4 o'clock in the morning. Maybe if it's later, you get a little more of it doesn't all happen at once. But but in places where it's not terribly late, if it's 2, I mean, a lot of people are going to stay out till 2, right?
Yeah, they sure will. And there's certain strategies to prevent that or just to mitigate some of the negatives of that occurrence. And we don't want to say that nightlife is a bad thing. In fact, we want to encourage a vibrant live, work, play environment in our neighborhoods. Those are the ones that we find most interesting, the ones that are going to be banner bearers for the city to attract new residents and so forth. But what we do want to be mindful of is that one space like the South Side is used not only by those drinkers, but people living above the bars, living on Sarah and Jane Streets adjacent to the main East Carson corridor. And so trying to figure out a way where those different use communities can coexist is really important.
Let's talk to our student, Jason Wald, who is representing the group of students that Michael Glass assembled for this neighborhood research project at the University of Pittsburgh. Jason, how many people did you interview? Did you and the other students interview?
We each had to get 50 interviews. I got to about 48. So I think in total it was well over 2,000 people throughout the month study.
And who were they? Who were the people you talked to?
Mostly visitors, a lot of people coming in for work, tattoo artists hanging outside the shop, people waiting in line at the theaters down there for shows. People in line for restaurants, taking smoke breaks from the bars. Some residents we got off the main East Carson Street and then would talk to residents walking home or walking their dogs at the parks. Really a whole variety of people.
And each day you were on site, your official research ended at 8 o'clock because as university-sanctioned work, there was a liability involved. But apparently that didn't stop you from going out on your own at later times as well as other students. What did you all witness? What did you see?
A good number of people getting thrown out of some of the more high-profile drinking establishments. I know we had someone in our group just sit there for a couple hours, ticking off how many people went in, how many people were out, some fights if it were to happen. Luckily, we never got involved with any of that. But, it was cool being there after the hours and kind of seeing how the South Side worked in its perception mode, kind of with all this high quantity drinking and what the issues surrounding it.
Based on what people who work in some of these Southside establishments told you, is there an emphasis on profit over a person's safety?
I think any business is going to have a mind towards keeping the numbers up, and the bar scenes especially, because you have to somehow differentiate yourself from all the other ones. So there's definitely drink specials and trying to be the lowest price to get the most people there. But I don't know. It seems – I wouldn't say safety is unconcerning and not a concern for them, but definitely maximizing profits was definitely something we noticed throughout all the different establishments.
One of your fellow students was quoted as saying there are a handful of bars that are really problematic because of the way that they promote their events and the way management operates, including lighting and crowding issues. What are you referring to specifically here?
Right.
Dr. Glass.
One of the students' groups emphasized the gender dynamics. It was interesting. Of the 2,100-odd surveys that were collected on the South Side, there was about a 50% ratio of men to women. And what was very interesting is that there was a statistically significant difference in the way that women perceived their own safety and comfort level on the South Side compared to men.
You found that people, particularly women, are being harassed.
Well, harassment was one of the things that was a qualitative comment that certainly was raised by some women. What I'm talking about is a question that was asked for everybody about how comfortable do you feel going out to Southside bars and restaurants after dark. If you compare the responses between male and female respondents, the females were considerably less comfortable with the notion of being out on the Southside. So you could draw your own conclusions about why that may be. And some of the recommendations that the students made was that it's not just in-club lighting that may be an issue, but also on-street lighting and how visible they feel to other pedestrians, to vehicles, and just to the sidewalk in general. But in terms of the harassment, yes, one of my students was interviewing service workers, and there was information coming from those more in-depth interviews that certainly made mention of some harassment that she had experienced. Again, that's anecdotal by one person, but we're hoping to expand that research in the future.
And, I mean, did this surprise you? Did it surprise you to hear that that in an environment like this, harassment is happening? So, were you expecting to see something different?
I'm not sure if we were expecting. It's always good to go into research with as little biases as possible. But from
of course.
From the stories you hear as a Pitt student growing up, you know, there's certain logics. You don't go to South Oakland after dark, though that perception has been changed quite a bit. The other one is, of course, that Southside's the party place to go, and it's the highest concentration of bars. So I guess in many ways, you know, we started off this research with this idea of what we were going to find. And certainly I don't think harassment or anything was expected to be found, but I can't say that I was surprised when a story like that pops up every now and then.
We are talking with a Pitt professor and a student who were involved in an urban studies research project that was embarked upon by the University of Pittsburgh Urban Studies program, in which people from all parts of the South Side neighborhood were interviewed to talk about their perceptions of the neighborhood. And some of the results might surprise you. We will get to what we learned from the residents. We've been talking in this segment, focusing primarily on the bar patrons and the bar owners, and as well as the people who work at these establishments. So what do the residents think? And is the bad rep that the South Side sometimes gets, is it deserved or not? And we'd also like to hear from you at 412-246-2002. This is Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking about the South Side and the South Side's reputation as a weekend party destination, which sometimes leads to trouble and has certainly led in part to a perception. Whether it's reality or not is for is not for me to say, but perhaps for you to decide based on some of the media reports, some of the coverage of the less savory events that might take place down here. But is it fair to label the South Side as a trouble spot Certainly there are residents here who do not think so. And part of the reason we know this is because of a recent study by the University of Pittsburgh's Urban Studies Program. They interviewed people from all parts of the neighborhood, students did, and the results may surprise you. We're going to delve into those. We're also going to hear from some people we went out to interview because, after all, we are on the South Side, so it's very easy for us to walk up to Carson Street and find out what people are thinking about. We'd also like to hear from you at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002 if you have a comment or question for our guests, who include Pitt Professor of Urban Studies Michael Glass and also one of the students who was involved in this research project, Jason Wald, who are both here in our studio. And I threw out the question, which people are tweeting about, evidently, in which I asked, do you travel to the South Side to party like a rock star?
It's not enough to travel to the South Side to party like a Pitt professor, I guess.
Well said, Dr. Glass. 412-246-2002, the number to call. Let's go to Steve on the South Side. Hi, Steve. You're on Essential Pittsburgh.
How you doing?
Good, good. Thank you. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Well, this is a, you know, of course, a very interesting topic, and thanks for having these guests on and their research and everything. I live on the South Side, but I've only lived here for 6 months. And one thing I've noticed that I've, having lived in several college towns prior to living in Pittsburgh, the South Side for me has a very college town feel in the sense that it serves that function, it seems, for the University of Pittsburgh and for Duquesne and the other universities in the area. And what I mean by that is it seems to swell during sporting events, so that it's not just college students. At that point, it becomes more adults visiting from outside the area. And so my question is, it seems to have a self-fulfilling prophecy that a lot of college towns have, and especially those with the party school reputation. I see a lot of bar crawl events and things like this that do promote what you might call irresponsible drinking.
Well, it's an interesting comment, Steve, and I think there's a lot to what you say about perception becomes reality. This is a place, and I guess I can say this to some extent from firsthand experience, because there are some great places along Carson Street to watch a sporting event if you want to be with people who are like-minded and cheering for the same teams that you are. So there is that. There is that idea that this is the place to maybe come and watch a sporting event or to celebrate a Steelers victory or a Penguins victory. But Dr. Glass, what about what Steve is asking about the idea that this sort of fulfills what you might find, say, on State Street in State College, Pennsylvania, for example, or in some other smaller college town where there are those places that you know are the destination spots to go and have a good time if you're a student or maybe a professor. Here in Pittsburgh, has the South Side become that destination spot for the college students as well as the sports fans?
Well, you'd have to ask Jason and other students where the hotspots are to go for them. But I would say that certainly the South Side's location adjacent to Duquesne University, to Point Park University, and the comparatively brief time it takes to travel from Oakland as well does lead
to Pitt or CMU students.
Right, exactly.
Or Carlo.
Exactly. It leads to that type of demographic finding a lot of utility in the space. But what we found in our results was that some of the perception about the South Side, really, when it's talking about college students, we need to be careful about that, because there are other young non-college folks that come down that use it for good or for ill, and also people that live here that are in that age category that aren't necessarily associated with the universities. So just casting aspersion on the college community, I think, is somewhat unwarranted. It's understandable, but there's a broader subset of under 30s that are traveling to the South Side.
Sure. And let's face it, supposedly students are not of legal age to drink, so the majority of them, so they wouldn't and shouldn't be down here drinking because they wouldn't be of legal age. Jason, I don't know if you are or you aren't, and it doesn't matter. You don't have to say either way. But What about that? What are the destinations for students? Is the South Side one of them?
I am of age, actually. I turned 21 over the summer, so I've had some decent experience now here in Pittsburgh for the scene. And if you want to get out of Oakland, the two that come to mind immediately are the South Side and Lawrenceville down near Butler Street. And it wouldn't surprise me if Butler Street would probably have a lot of the same issues that you can, you know, probably transpose a lot of what is said about the South Side and East Carson Street's problems with everyone spilling out at 2 a.m. and public drunkenness could probably be applied to a couple of handful of other streets throughout Pittsburgh. But yeah, I would definitely say around Pitt, if you're planning a 21st birthday for a friend, you know, it's definitely you do the Oakland one the night of, but then the next weekend or something, you want to go down and do the Southside bar crawl. It's kind of like an Oakland institution, almost like a rite of passage here at Pitt. I can't speak for Carnegie Mellon or anything else, but I think beyond that, though, people, you know, there's a lively music scene here, and that definitely draws people beyond just the college students, the movie theater and all this stuff down at the Works as well.
Well, we ventured out into the South Side to talk to people here about their perceptions of the South Side, and here's what we heard.
My name is Leslie, and I live in Highland Park. I like the South Side as a neighborhood. The problem for people who work here, and we're in the service industry, so we need our clients to be able to come also, is there's nowhere for the employees to park now that they permit park at all of the side streets, and the clients can't park either. I mean, I understand, you know, the flip side of it where the residents say, you know, I own a house here and I can't park in front of my own house. But when you bought the house, there was no garage, there was no driveway, nothing's changed. If someone's spending money on the South Side and contributing to us paying taxes to the South Side, then they shouldn't have to put $6, $7, $8 into parking too. So it's really just become an issue, and we have seen it affecting our business.
My name is Scott, and I live in McCandless. I own a business on the South Side. The perception of the South Side is changing daily. I think it's becoming known as more of a place to come down and shop and eat as opposed to just a place to drink and be silly. I see a lot more suburban people, and I do believe that the South Side has become probably the biggest tourist destination in the city. I think some of the things that could be done to improve the viability of the South Side would be the parking issue. It tends to be a problem for people. Cleanliness, you know, the Chamber of Commerce does work diligently to keep the streets clean, but it always seems to be an issue. And I don't think there's a safety issue on the South Side at all. So I don't think, you know, the police presence is fine down here. I don't think that's a problem for us either.
My name is Sharon, and I live in Crafton. I really like it. You know, sometimes I just come walk to the park, and the park's always nice. From what I see on the news, they seem to have a lot of problems, but maybe I'm just not here at the right time.
And those are the comments of some of the people we interviewed on Carson Street about their perceptions of the South Side. And as you heard, they are some of those folks are from other parts of the city. As far as the people on the South Side that you spoke with, Jason Wald, one of the students who took part in this Pitt Research Project, some of the South Side residents you spoke with wanted to emphasize the neighborhood's good qualities. And what are they?
A lot of the residents we asked, we had the question, do you feel it's a lively neighborhood? And we got overwhelmingly positive reviews on that one, especially.
Not surprising.
There's a lot of people find the heritage of the building styles there, the like physical environment that they live in, when it's not covered in trash from the night out, that it's a strong part of the identity there. People are generally, you know, the parking is always going to be an issue, and especially with Pittsburgh's narrow streets. But I would say people are generally happy here, and it looked, at least from our study, that though you know, the neighborhood has its issues, but it'd be hard-pressed to find one that doesn't. People are generally, they want to make it work here, and they enjoyed living here. They have long, strong family ties to the area. Maybe they've grown up here their whole life, so.
Well, one interesting comment that I heard from a musician, singer-songwriter Justin Carey, who played up at the Club Cafe, and at the end of his set, he said, I love it down here. Real people, real buildings, which were unlike some of the other places he visited in the U.S. on his tour. This is a guy from Scotland making these comments. Speaking of comments, we have John on the phone from the West End. John, good to have a West Ender with us. How are you?
Very good, sir. Yes, I'd just like to say that even though the perception of the South Side as a party destination is very well known and well established, there's other times of the days and week that those of us in the middle age bracket love going down to the South Side. My friends at Pittsburgh Guitars, Riverfront Park, our dog loves it. It's a good canoe put-in takeout spot. Tuesday afternoon farmers market. It's like Cinderella. You just get out of Dodge before like 8 p.m. on a weekend night, and you don't dare go down there, you know, St. Patrick's Day, Saturday, parade day. You know, it's just a matter of timing. But there's a whole cadre of people that enjoy the South Side and its quieter times.
So, yeah, that's absolutely right.
I didn't know the study was looking into that, like what period of the day and how the perception can actually change. So that does exist as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, John. And that's why I had my students there at different times of the day, at different times of the week, throughout the months of September through December, just because if you go down there once, especially, say, if it's after 8 p.m., you might get a very different read on the community. It is a very vibrant, mixed-use type of space, the sort of space that we really want to create in other areas as well. So understanding what makes that tick and how that's constructed can help these students when they become planners, community activists, and other thought leaders in their own cities to help replicate some of the good that we find in places like the South Side.
Let's go to Rob on the South Side. Rob, you're on Essential Pittsburgh.
Hello, are you there?
Yes, we are here. You are on the air.
Oh, great. Thank you. My wife and I, we're two sort of middle-aged professionals. We have two young kids. Personally, I've lived in New York, Boston, Montreal, New Orleans, Sydney, Australia, and Philadelphia, and this is the best neighborhood I've ever lived in my whole life.
Wow.
And I think some of those aspects are not really coming across on your program. And it's the walking culture here is incredible. We walk down to the river. We'll take our kids on bicycles, bike to Sandcastle. We'll walk to the stadiums downtown. We'll walk to Console. We'll walk to Station Square. We have five-minute access to all sorts of museums. We walk to the grocery store, to the banks, to healthcare, to live music, to theater, to my mechanic, to restaurants, to parks, to the video arcade, to my laundry. The people here who live here, not the students. I mean, I don't know a lot of the students. The best neighbors I've ever had live here because they're trying to strengthen the community. Last week we had a community event. It was a public party for the residents of the South Side, and the turnout was phenomenal.
What part of the South Side are you on, Rob?
I live not far from the center of it, basically very close to the main corridor at 17th and Carson.
And you say you have children?
Yes.
So what happens on Friday and Saturday nights? How do you deal with everything that's going on? Do you just avoid it, or are you far enough away from it that it doesn't impact you?
The kids don't go out, and they're not exposed to that. Now, I wish there was a way of making it all blend together appropriately. And so it's not really all that appropriate to take kids out late on Friday or Saturday night. But what I'm trying to get across is that, and what I don't think that Pittsburghers know, and I've been here for about a decade, is that this is an incredible place with incredible access to lots of things. And it's not, sure, all of the things that you're talking about are there. But in addition, there's just a wealth of good things down here.
Well, Rob, it's good that you're here. It sounds like you lived in when you were going through your itinerary of the other places that you have been. It really is quite amazing and certainly a compliment to the city and to the neighborhood that you think as highly as you do of it, and we appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
If I could speak to Rob's comments, what he raises certainly came through in the study, where people like Rob who've lived in the South Side for over 2 or 3 years, say, not your short-term renters, but those people that get to really engage with the community, there's a breakpoint that occurs where as you get more embedded within the community, you start to appreciate the many facets of the South Side that it has. And one of the things he was mentioning in terms of community block parties or those types of events was one of the things that the students were recommending occurs more frequently, just to tie in, to bring in those short-term residents so they get to understand a little bit more of the complexity that the neighborhood has.
The South Side seems to run the gamut from blue-collar roots to a model of today's gentrified neighborhoods as exemplified by South Side Works. Does the perception of the South Side change depending on the geographic locale?
Certainly, there seemed to be a different opinion on the South Side for those people that were focusing on interviewing residents and visitors up at the South Side Works compared to the places down towards your studio around 12th Street.
We are just about down to a minute or so left. You presented some of your findings to the city council. How did that go?
It went very well, and we were glad to have four of the council members, four of the seven council members in attendance there. Councilwoman Deb Gross, for instance, who represents Lawrenceville, was there and was very interested in how some of the issues that that the South Side is experiencing could be prevented in her own area. That includes the Butler Street that Jason was mentioning.
And Jason, before we wrap up, we'll give you one final comment. What ultimately should come of this research? What do you think?
So the our group actually was very much focused on this whole idea of getting the college population, the college student population here in the South Side more engaged and trying to make them better neighbors and really integrating them into the neighborhood as short-term renters. And so keeping that in mind and trying to engage with all facets of the population that lives here, not just the college students, not just the visitors, and not just the longtime residents, but really an all-encompassing model to make sure everyone's getting their voices heard and opinions listened to.
Pitt student Jason Wald, who took part in a study initiated by the class of Pitt professor Michael Glass, professor of urban studies at the University of Pittsburgh. They looked at all things South Side, and you were hearing about some of the results. Thanks to both of you for being in Studio A to talk about this. Professor Glass and Jason Wald, we appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for having us.
More Essential Pittsburgh coming up. This is 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Sometimes you just need to get away without going too far. One way to treat yourself and recharge the batteries is by checking into an art hotel. Here with suggestions for some great places to stay that aren't far away is Elaine LaBalme, who tweets about food and travel under the Twitter handle New Girl in Town. Hi, Elaine. How are you?
It's going great. How are you, Paul?
I'm well, thank you. Okay, New Girl, you're looking at art hotels this week, which are popular outside the U.S., but just starting to take hold here. Explain how this works.
Okay, generally these are smaller boutique properties in cities. It could work a variety of ways. It could be the owner's art collection that is in the hotel. Some of them are designed as a gallery space set up in the hotel itself with rotating exhibits. And oftentimes you will see a property that has purchased site-specific artwork that works with the hotel, the size of the spaces, the tone of the space. They tend to be more modern properties. A lot of them adaptive reuse. However, you take an old warehouse or an older building and they've modernized it in a city center, an urban core, and just brought that extra added touch of the art, which really enhances the experience, a different dimension.
We're lucky to have some terrific art hotels in the region, and they're a relatively short drive away. You really like the Joseph in Columbus, Ohio.
Love this place. And it's very new, just opened in January. It's in the Short North neighborhood, which is a kind of a fun and funky gentrifying neighborhood with lots of shops and galleries and restaurants and whatnot. And the owners there are Ron and Ann Pizzuti, and they have been contemporary art collectors for many years. And what they've done is they've wanted to open a place to showcase some of their art, which is in the common area, select pieces that make sense. It's a beautiful modern hotel. And around the corner, they have opened what they call the Pizzuti Collection. And it's a combination gallery museum. You take your room key to walk in the front door, three-level space, with a fantastic selection of art. We were there not too long ago, and some of the pieces are just terrific. You have to see it to believe it. We got lost in it for 90 minutes. So they've done a great job with this in Columbus in a very sort of fun area.
And there is a thriving food scene, and it is in and around the Joseph in Columbus. So what are your favorites?
Oh, well, we had a lot of fun eating there. I would say for breakfast, you start in the morning at a place called the Fox in the Snow Cafe, also relatively new in the Italian Village neighborhood, which is just outside of the city center area. I had a cinnamon roll there that I can still remember, and I would start every day with just that.
A cinnamon roll. Now, that seems to be such a simple pedestrian thing.
Oh, between the dough and the frosting. Let me tell you, you can take cinnamon rolls to an art form, Paul.
You don't need to sell me on the cinnamon roll.
And they do. I just dream of that cinnamon roll. So the Fox and the Snow Cafe have lunch at the venerable North Market in Columbus. It's an old market / food hall. Been there for years, but a lot of new eateries are coming in. My favorite, Little Eater Artisanal salads and quiches. Oh, they were so good. And then you sit upstairs in the periphery and you just look down at all the action in the food hall. It's great fun. Great way to spend your lunch hour. Have dinner at the Guild House, which is right in the Joseph Hotel. It's a Cameron Mitchell restaurant. He's a restaurateur with about a dozen spots in Columbus. At this one, young chef. His name is John Paul Iacobucci. So talented. I remember this this dish, scallops in English peas in an orange sauce. Oh, so good. Dramatic room. Very also artistic, stylish. So you can eat very well at the Joseph. Spend the night there, too.
It's Essential Pittsburgh, and we're talking with our travel contributor, Elaine LaBalm, who, again, tweets about food and travel under the Twitter handle New Girl in Town. Just down the road in Cincinnati, the 21C is as much art gallery as it is hotel. What can you tell us about this place?
You know, another great choice. The owners there are Laura Lee Brown and Steve Wilson. They're contemporary art collectors based in Louisville, and they actually opened the first 21C hotel in Louisville, oh, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. They opened the second one in Cincinnati a couple, 3 years ago, and this is a place that showcases some of their art. It's more of a gallery space, and they bring in artists and showcase their work. There's a fellow there now named Alfonso Abano, I believe is his name. He's Brazilian, and it's got a very unique take on landscapes. I do remember on a visit a couple years ago, I saw an exhibit by the artist Kehinde Wiley, who has since taken off. He just had a very big exhibit in New York City recently. So the owners of this hotel, Laura Brown and Steve Wilson, they have a very good eye for art, discovering talent. It's a modern, very sort of, you know, clean backdrop. The hotel itself lends itself well to showcasing art.
The food scene in Cincinnati ranges from the simple to the sublime, and we know this because you brought us Cincinnati chili back one time for one of your visits there. Tell us more about what else there is.
Well, two words now, fried chicken. There's a big thing going on with fried chicken in a lot of cities right now. They have a place in Over the Rhine, which is their sort of hipster hang neighborhood. It's actually an old German neighborhood, but it's in Cincinnati. And the Eagle OTR, it's a great place for fried chicken, kind of crispy skin, a little bit spicy. So
is that because they're so close to Kentucky that there's that influence coming from the South?
I wonder if there's some bourbon in that fried chicken. It wouldn't surprise me. You just cross that Ohio River and you're in Kentucky and it's bourbon. So that could
be. Nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. Oh, it is so good. But talking about bourbon, there's another place in Cincinnati you wouldn't want to miss, the Rheingeist Brewery. Same neighborhood, huge cavernous space. You can see the big tanks with the beer, but they're also making it fun. They've got picnic tables throughout. They've got ping pong. They've got cornhole. So you can spend the afternoon there having a few beers and playing games and whatnot. Dinner at Soto, also in the Over the Rhine neighborhood, an Italian restaurant. Andy Tanner is the chef there. Amazing stuff. I've had some great pastas there. They have this amazing starter, a chicken liver mousse that's just out of this world. So you can eat very well. And then, oh gosh, for breakfast, Taste of Belgium, chicken and waffles. Again, it's chicken. They're expanding. They're doing it better than just about anybody else. So lots of good food options. Cincinnati chili is still there, and it rates, but they're elevating their game when it comes to food.
What else should we not miss in these cities?
All right. Well, in Columbus, I would say get over to the Wexner Center for the Arts on the Ohio State campus, a really nice little gallery with rotating exhibits. In Cincinnati, you know, the parallels to Pittsburgh in terms of the rivers and the bridges and whatnot are very close. I'd say start with a run. They've got, you know, all those bridges right off of downtown, cross from one to the other. Friendship Park is a new park right along the riverfront there, Ohio River. Hey, you can go see the Bucks play the Reds in Cincinnati throughout the summer if you'd like. And actually, the All-Star game this year is in Cincinnati. So you can get there for a visit soon in the spring, which is a really nice time to go, and return in the summer.
And one of the reasons they have that All-Star Game is the new ballpark. They built a new ballpark in Cincinnati.
Which I have been to. I don't know what, if you have. It's
I have
beautiful.
Not. What do you think of it?
Oh, fantastic. You know, I will say this. While PNC Park feels very cozy and small, you get this very, very expansive feeling at Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati. It's big. It's beautiful. It sits right on the river, as does our ballpark. They've done a really nice job with it. It's a great place to see a game.
Well, it sounds like we have plenty to do in Cincinnati, except for WKRP. They're not there anymore. But
anymore.
Other than that, lots of stuff happening, and you have given us a beat on all of it. Thank you so much, Elaine LaBalme. She's our travel contributor. She tweets about food and travel under the Twitter handle New Girl in Town.
Thank you.
See you next time.
You bet.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. If you missed any portion of the program or would like to revisit past segments, you can go to our website at wesa.fm. Until Monday, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Have a great weekend, everybody.